Because we're arguing Wilson and McPherson, and the counsel are the same for both cases, and one might say that the issues are somewhat commingled, we will hear the cases in order, and the government will go first in the first case, and the appellant will go first in the second case, but you should not feel obliged to use all of your time, and you are allowed to, of course, make arguments that might apply to either case. Is that fair? Everybody in agreement on that? Okay, please. Government.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief Judge Baker, honorable judges of the court. May it please the court. I am Major Daniel Breen, and along with Mr. Roger Bruce, we represent the United States in this matter. In response to the issue certified, it is the government's position that, consistent with Weber v. Bureau of Prisons, the language of Article 58 can be interpreted to trump the language of 12, that the legislative histories of Article 12 and 58 support the analysis that Article 12 should not apply to civilian confinement facilities, and finally, allowing Article 12 to abrogate Article 58 would lead to absurd results. Therefore, the United States respectfully requests this court to hold that Article 12 does not apply to civilian confinement facilities.
Okay, counsel. Isn't the normal rule in reading statutes that you read them in pari materia unless there is an absolute conflict?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Where's the conflict here?
Well, the conflict that
you've got a general statute that authorizes the government to do certain things. You've got a specific statute that says you can only do it in a certain way. How do those collide?
Well, Your Honor, we look at my interpretation of Article 58 is that is a specific statute, too.
No, it's a general authorization for the government to put people in county jails. And you can read it in pari materia with 12 to say they can only put them in these jails subject to certain specific conditions. Now, where's the conflict?
Well, the conflict arises when you look at the absurd results
that I didn't say that. It may produce absurd results, but we're not the legislature.
Counsel, Judge Stuckey has a clear view here. Could you answer this question? There's a tension between appellant, I'm losing track of who's who, but a tension between the parties on which is the general statute and which is the specific, because you're both making the same argument, but you're flipping it. Why don't you walk through and tell us why you believe 58 is the more specific statute and how you define what it is you define as the pivot?
Well, Your Honor, our analysis of why 58 was more specific was derived through the opinion in Weber versus Bureau of Prisons from the D.C. Circuit. And in that decision, they stated that Article 58 states categorically that military prisoners housed in Bureau of Prisons facilities shall be subject to the same treatment as their civilian counterparts. It does not create an exception concerning confinement with foreign nationals, nor does Article 12 of the Code provide that its prohibition against such confinement survives Article 58's same treatment rule. Thus, by its terms, Article 58 trumps Article 12.
But, counsel, what precedential value does Weber have for us?
Well, I wouldn't say that has precedential value. However, its analysis may be instructive to the court, and this court, if they are so inclined to agree, can adopt a similar analysis. So this is more just a federal court has looked at the issue and they have issued an opinion. But just like even a published opinion, it would have precedential value.
It doesn't even have precedential value for the D.C. Circuit, does it?
It does not. They did see precedential value in it, and I strongly believe that the reason for that is this is not an issue that has been before them or will be before them often.
Whose interpretation of the statutes in the UCMJ gets more weight, ours or theirs?
This court's.
So you're arguing it's persuasive authority, if anything?
Yes, sir.
But what's the core argument? The argument isn't they decided it that way, so we should too.
No, not at all.
Go back to what is the specific thing that 58's addressing, and why is that the more specific of the two?
It's more
regardless of what anybody else has said.
Yes, Your Honor. It's more specific in terms of location. Article 12 did not provide for location. And in fact, when they say confinement, they didn't refer to it as a location or a type, whether they meant pretrial, post-trial, or they meant military confinement, civilian confinement. So it is more specific in that realm that when you have a situation where you have federal confinement, the individuals should be subjected to the same treatment. But even if this court isn't persuaded by that analysis, still, when you look at the legislative history, you can see the conflict between the two. And as was discussed in United States v. Bartlett, 62 MJ 426, statutes should be construed to harmonize them if possible, but this does not empower courts to undercut the clearly expressed intent of Congress in enacting a particular statute. And that's kind of the problem we have here between 12 and 58. If we go ahead and harmonize them by making Article 12 the dominant statute and make Article 58 subordinate, as the Air Force Court did, making it an exception, and it's still undercutting the clearly expressed intent of Congress. And in Wise, when this court, looking at an Article 12 case, not in this context, also stated at 475, unclear language can become clear if the congressional intent behind the legislation is reviewed. And legislative history is quite instructive in this matter. And it's been detailed in the brief and a pretty lengthy joint appendix with some of the legislative history. But just to hit upon a couple of items, during the debate, Robert Smith, a professional staff member of the subcommittee, commented that the intent of the provision was to ensure that American boys were not confined with prisoners of war or other enemy nationals. And Congressman Mendel Rivers from South Carolina commented, like happened during the war. Then, when there was about to be some discussion of foreign jails and other jail situations, they were stopped. And it was, oh, that's Article 58. Yes, that's a different provision. That is the federal prisons. Well, I don't want to interrupt. We'll look at that a little more carefully when we reach 58, which is a long way in the future. And I think when they're going through this process, they're really looking at these things separately. And you can really tell that when you look through the Article 58 analysis, which there wasn't so much debate on. It was more a matter of members of the Navy and Army speaking glowingly about federal institutions. The Navy had had a practice of having members in federal institutions for a long period of time. The Army was more limited under the Articles of War. As of December 31st, 1948, this is at Joint Appendix 61 and 65, there were 255 Naval members in federal institutions. The Army, in looking at this, and this is at Joint Appendix 73, expressed their desire to move 1,500 of their own prisoners to the federal system.
Okay, but counsel, even if we were to get to the point where this court felt it was necessary to look at legislative history, doesn't the legislative history that you cite in your own brief actually cut against everything you're saying here? Initially, Article 12 read, quote, outside the continental limits of the United States. But then Congress removed that.
Well, Your Honor, the outside the continental United States, that's not something that I think is important in terms of determining what, in terms of the foreign national part of this. The legislative intent was to prevent our service members from being with enemy prisoners of war and enemy nationals during the debate.
But that's not what the article clearly states.
Well, but we know that the intent behind it. The article now.
So, but why do we need to reach that if the statute, the article is clear?
Where do you find your ambiguity that opens the door to legislative history? Is the question.
Well,
is that fair to say?
Yes.
Yeah. I see ambiguity in terms of how they use the language enemy prisoners or other foreign nationals, not members of the armed forces. Does enemy modify just the prisoners, or does it just modify the foreign nationals? It could be.
It says other foreign nationals. Isn't that pretty clear? Enemy prisoners or other foreign nationals. Enemy doesn't modify other because other sets it off.
Well, in terms of that, in that regard, then why did they even have to use the word prisoners at all? They could have just used the term foreign nationals, not members of the armed forces. It's unclear.
They made it broader.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
They made it broader by its own terms. You know, you haven't answered Judge Olson's question.
Can ambiguity be created by the juxtaposition of articles that are in conflict?
And that is our position, that by comparing 12 and 58, the inherent conflict between the two is what creates the ambiguity, which is why it's important to look at the legislative history.
Were they passed at the same time or not?
They were passed at the same time. The Uniform Code of Military Justice, all the articles were passed at one time.
Is there a split between circuits, or is this a case where one circuit has spoken and the others are silent?
Only the Air Force Court has dealt with this issue. The Army and Navy have never had occasion where, looking through Westlaw, that I can see that they gave credit for someone being in civilian confinement. And if you do enough Westlaw searches, you'll find plenty of times where people were in civilian confinement.
Does the record reflect, or are there matters about which we can take judicial notice, indicating whether this is or is not a issue in the other services?
It does.
This being the potential application or not of Article 12.
Well, it appears to me that if we've had a history of confining people since 1908 in federal institutions and no one's ever raised it but the Air Force Court, it's never been a problem for anybody else because they've never interpreted Article 12 to give credit for the other services. There are plenty of cases. I just find it hard to believe that.
So you are inferring that this is happening. There's nothing in the record or that we can take judicial notice of that indicates that it's mutatis mutandis.
There's nothing in the record. It would just be simple mathematics to think that only Air Force people have ever happened to be in a location where they've had a foreigner in their.
But no other CCA has been asked.
It's never been addressed.
No, good.
Have the other services closed their correction facilities to the extent that the Air Force has?
That I don't know. I just know from doing Westlaw researches that you will find cases where individuals that are a part of the other services are confined in civilian situations, and you'll run into that in the AWOL and deserter status. That's always going to happen, even if we had confinement facilities for every installation, for every service.
Why don't you just get the language changed? Why don't you request an amendment to the language of Article 12?
Well, that is something that obviously we would like to have happen, but as this court knows, there are lots of situations that occur where this court has to interpret the articles constantly, and a quicker, easier solution is to have a...
Is to have us revise the statute for you?
No, not to have, but to have the analysis of the statute that meets the legislative intent at the time.
Okay, counsel, let's go back to the threshold question. Why should we answer this question at all? Why isn't this an advisory opinion?
Okay. Well, Your Honor, first I have to point out that this was this was certified by the court and well.
We asked the CCA to answer the question. Right. They did. The government won below, but the government didn't like the way the question was answered.
And so
where's the case or controversy?
Well, this was tied to McPherson as well, where in McPherson this was an issue, and they were certified.
Well, we're talking about Wilson now. We haven't discussed McPherson yet. Yeah, so I'm asking you the threshold question.
In terms of Wilson,
in fairness, apropos of my introduction, we did say that folks could argue both cases.
Both cases, yeah. I mean, if you want to argue McPherson, go ahead and argue. But I'm talking about Wilson. The government won on the merits below, but it didn't like the way the certified issue was answered. So now here it is. So why isn't this an advisory opinion?
Well, in this instance, this is our only recourse, is to come to the court to correct errors of law from the Air Force Court.
Well, but that doesn't really answer my question. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. The last thing I'd like to move on to is the issue of absurdity, and I think that's quite important when you're dealing with 12 and 58, because Wilson and McPherson provide the classic example of the absurdity that this problem has created. In Wilson, you have a member who's in solitary confinement to ensure there's no Article 12 violation as determined by the Air Force Court. And McPherson, you have someone claiming an Article 12 violation because they were in immediate association with someone known as the Mexican who played cards. So we have a situation where if we maintain a position that Article 12 trumps Article 58, then we're essentially forced to place people into solitary confinement. And also, it's then you run into another situation we've had recent, that hasn't reached this court yet, where we're now having same treatment claims.
So, counsel, just to clarify, are you saying that it is sufficient that there can be an absurd result, or should the standard be there must be an absurd result from the interpretation of the
It's my understanding that it can be, but in this situation
sufficient.
We do have an absurd result.
So can be is sufficient in your view?
In my view.
Yeah. So, counsel, just to be clear, both of these cases that were here today, the reason they were in the civilian jail, right, is because there was no confinement facility at the base.
That is correct.
And whose decision was that?
Well, that is the Air Force Correction System.
Now, you're out of time, but you have opportunity on rebuttal in the first case, which is certified.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Counsel for the from Wilson.
Good morning, Chief Judge Baker, honorable members of the court. May it please the court, my name is Captain Thomas Smith, and I, along with Colonel Pat Wells, represent the appellee, Technical Sergeant Jimmy Wilson. Sergeant Wilson has never requested relief for a violation of Article 12. Instead, he has consistently sought relief because he was automatically confined in isolation at the Cook County Jail in Georgia because a previous military prisoner had complained of an Article 12 violation. Thus, before Sergeant
But let's Wilson, be clear. Wait, your complaint is that you should get credit because you were placed in solitary confinement, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would it be a lawful reason to place someone in solitary confinement if the reason was to avoid an Article 12 violation, if that were the sole mechanism to adhere to Article 12?
If that were the sole mechanism.
We'll stipulate for the purpose of the question.
Under certain circumstances, if that were the sole mechanism, then...
But doesn't Article 12 then become part and parcel of your claim for relief? That if, don't we have to, wouldn't one need to address that question if the Air Force is defending the solitary confinement, which for which you're seeking credit, on the ground that they did it because of Article 12, doesn't that put Article 12 in play?
Not in this case, Your Honor. It's the appellee's position that there were alternatives in this case. That wasn't the only option, was to place Sergeant Wilson in solitary confinement. There were other confinement facilities that Air Force could have used, Air Force confinement facilities, other service.
But they happen to use this one, and the appellant doesn't get to pick his confinement facility, does he?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And I'm really just getting at whether or not Article 12 is in play. If you're claiming, hey, you put me in solitary confinement, isn't the government allowed to defend on the basis of why it put you in solitary confinement?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. But in this case...
Which is different than the government winning below and so on. But go ahead.
It's been the appellee's position that that wasn't a reasonable solution in this case. And he sought relief on those grounds.
But they may not be reasonable, but it opens the door to addressing Article 12 so that we can at least say it's not reasonable. True or false? Yes or no? Or please explain.
I'm not sure if I understand your
argument. Well, your argument is that Article 12 isn't in play at all and shouldn't be discussed in the case that is not a live issue, correct?
The appellate's position is that whether Article 12 applies or not, he still should be entitled to relief. If Article 12 doesn't apply, then he was isolated for no rational reason.
I thought your position was that It doesn't make any difference whether Article 12 applies, because any question relating to 12 is advisor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well then, it's not the merits of whether 12 applies. It's that we can't answer the question, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Why is it advisory if your claim is they locked me up because of Article 12 and they shouldn't have?
Because it's appellee's understanding that the only remedy for an Article 12 violation is if there is, in fact, confinement in immediate association with a foreign national or an enemy prisoner. If this court sees an avenue to release for an improper application of Article 12, then appellant would, or the appellee, would take the position that that is something that he's interested in, that in his situation, Article 12, if it applied, which at the time was Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals case law, whether it applied or not, he still should be entitled to relief. One, under the theory that if it didn't apply, then there was no reason to isolate him.
Clearly so.
Under the other theory that if it did apply, it was an improper application of Article 12.
But if it's an improper... But then the question is, was it an improper application of Article 12 is a live question.
Yes.
Are you reading a less restrictive alternative into this?
Yes, Your Honor. I guess that's a bit...
Also speak up a little?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, tell me how you get the less restrictive alternative.
If I understand, Your Honor, correctly...
Well, I thought that's what you were saying.
Well, I guess let me try to clarify. It's the appellant's position that there is no relief available to him, but it's become apparent to appellee that this court may see an avenue to relief for an improper application of Article 12 or an improper attempt to apply by Article 12. If that's the case, that would be appellee's initial position, is that there is no issue for the appellee in this case. The alternative would be, if this court believes that that is an avenue for relief, then the appellee would agree that the government improperly applied Article 12.
Well, but that gets us into the McPherson situation, doesn't it? Do you have to exhaust? Did he ask anybody for anything? Did he complain? All of that.
Yes, Your Honor. And in the Wilson case, he did complain. He complained, he asked for deferment of his confinement before he, immediately after his court-martial. That was denied, and he also complained in his clemency matters.
Well, did he ask for deferment because he thought he was going to be confined with foreign nationals?
Yes, Your Honor.
He did?
I believe he did, Your Honor. That was specified in the request for deferment by his counsel. I believe it was the day after his court-martial. So Sergeant Wilson did complain on two separate occasions, and he was denied relief on both those occasions. So now the only relief available to him at this point is if this court finds that an improper application of Article 12 should result in some relief to him.
Can you turn to the question of statutory instruction involving the general and the specific, and address the tension between the government's argument and appellee's argument as between Article 12 and Article 58, which is the general and which is the specific, and how do you define, what term are you using to define the more specific? The government's position, for example, if I have it correct, is that the 58 is the more specific because it is more specific as to the location of incarceration. But appellee takes a different view and says, no, 12 is the more specific because now you say why.
Yes, Your Honor, I guess speaking more toward the McPherson case, Article 12 is the more specific provision. It says clearly that military members will not be confined with the enemy or other foreign nationals, not members of the armed forces of the United States. It doesn't give anything. There's no language in there that limits.
Hmm.
an argument in rain. Yes.
Article 58 is a provision that allows the military to confine somebody who's been court-martialed virtually any place that the United States may be allowed to use. That's why Article 58 is the more general provision. It's just they're trying to make it more convenient for the military to confine court-martial convicts where it's best and easiest for the military to do so. But they must do so within the context of Article 12. And that's made clear not only in the plain language of the statute itself, but the legislative history also makes that clear. I believe it's on Joint Appendix 53. It contains the conversation between Mr. Anderson and Mr. Larkin discussing the removal of the language limiting its application to outside the continental United States so that it applied every place. It doesn't become much clearer than that.
How would you describe the legislative purpose behind Article 58?
It appears to be to McPherson that the legislative purpose behind Article 58 is simply to make it more convenient for the military to confine service members to serve out a court-martial sentence wherever a facility is available for the United States to use.
It's a convenience, and the legislative history reflects that the primary motivation behind 58 was to be convenient?
Yes, Your Honor.
What about rehabilitation? Was that part of it?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that falls under convenience. They talk in the legislative history about how the military doesn't necessarily specialize in penal rehabilitation, so it is convenient and beneficial for the military to transfer prisoners to BOP facilities, state facilities, where people that specialize in that type of rehabilitation can handle those prisoners. So I guess I just lumped it all under convenience, the rehabilitative aspect as well.
Does that legislative purpose, if you get to legislative history, play into this? And if so, how? And if not, why?
I'm not sure I understand Your Honor's question.
Well, how does rehabilitation as a legislative purpose relate to the interplay between 12 and 58, if at all?
I'm not sure that they relate at all. I think Article 12's purpose is separate and distinct from Article 58's purpose. Article 12 appears from the legislative history to be a prohibition on confining with the enemy and other foreign nationals, because obviously it would be a bad situation to confine somebody with the enemy and other foreign nationals. There's some discussion in the legislative history about how that might appear demeaning or be a safety issue.
Is there anything in the legislative history that would reflect how Congress thought to reconcile Article 12 and Article 58 in light of the fact that the legislative history also reflects that everyone was knowledgeable that foreign nationals were included in the general prison population at the time?
I think the closest thing to reconciliation is on the Joint Appendix, page 53, that continued conversation between Mr. Anderson and Mr. Larkin. The main concern there seems to be by Mr. Anderson that he wonders if there's a place in the code that prohibits the confinement of military members in foreign jails, and it's explained to him that no, there's not. He brings up Article 58, thinking, it's my interpretation of this passage that he brings up, because he feels like Article 58 contains a prohibition on confining military members in foreign jails. And that's what prompts the response, no, we're just talking about federal prisons, that type of thing, even though I think that's shorthand, what they're referring to there. I think the Article 58 clearly says on its face that you can confine a military member anywhere that the United States may be allowed to use. But it's in this passage of legislative history, they're both discussed together, and the only way it's brought up is conflict is by Mr. Anderson thinking that it somehow prohibits the confinement in a foreign jail. There's no mention that the same treatment clause is in conflict with Article 12, and one has to think that if anybody thought that that was a problem, that would have been brought up at that time. Are any further questions?
All right. Thank you for availing yourself of that opportunity. We thank counsel. Counsel for the government, do you want to rebut on this case?
Your Honors, first point I want to address is the advisory opinion aspect. Just a few points I'd just like to outlay. Wilson was in solitary to avoid Article 12. It is our position that we didn't win at AFCA, and that by having a published decision, it unnecessarily requires Article 12 analysis at the trial and appellate level, that this court remanded the precise question and AFCA got it wrong. And also, during the argument for appellate defense counsel, he said there's the potential that, dependent upon the ruling of this court, there may be an avenue for relief. Finally, in terms of McPherson, this would not be an advisory opinion. The next place I'd like to discuss briefly is, Judge Baker, your question about the interplay between Article 12 and Article 58 and rehab. If Article 12 is intended to prevent members from being with any foreign national, then logic would dictate that it would kill any rehab opportunities as contemplated by Article 58 in the discussion, because we'd be left with two solutions. Either the person's going to have to be placed in solitary confinement where they can't enjoy any benefits or same treatment, or we cannot use the federal prisons, which we know from the 58 discussion wasn't the intent of Congress. It was encouraged that the military use those facilities. Last, in terms of the absurd result, I discussed the fact that in Wilson we have the diametrically opposed. If I'm in solitary, I should get credit because you're punishing me under the Eighth Amendment. And under McPherson, I should get Article 12 credit because I was in close proximity to a person known as the Mexican that plays cards. We also have situations where there are claims being raised about same treatment now, the mere fact that now it's a Article 58 violation. So it becomes an untenable paradox. And finally, in terms of the absurd result, I think the impact on the confinees themselves. Now, I'm sure any of the confinees would much rather be in a situation where they're playing cards with someone who is a foreign national, or if Justin Bieber blows in a Tampa or a concert, they get housed in confinement with him than being forced to be in solitary confinement. So I think that there would be a severe negative effect, both in rehab potential, as well as the fact that it would not be something that I think most ordinary people would want to have happen.
That may well be true, counsel, but isn't that an argument for the legislature?
Your Honor, it is the United States' position that due to the conflict that is created and the fact that it is unclear that by going to legislative history and determining intent, this court can fix.
No, you're basically arguing policy. And that's something for the legislature. No, I'm not talking about past legislative history. I'm talking about fixing this if the government thinks it needs to be fixed.
And Your Honor, respectfully, it's our position that due to ambiguity, there's ambiguousness and problems with articles that this court deals with all the time, and they fix many situations that would be damaging to either the government or confinees or future individuals.
Counsel, I'm interested in how far your analysis or your position on Article 58 goes. Essentially, it's your position that Article 58 says that if we put prisoners in there, they all have to be treated the same. What about Article 13 and RCM 305, illegal pretrial confinement? We've applied those when individuals have been placed in civilian facilities, But it appears, if, for instance, if they are confined with the individuals who have already been convicted, depending on what they are required to wear, those types of issues, would that no longer be applicable in civilian facilities under your interpretation of Article 58?
Well, in doing research on the Article 13, there was a lot of focus on, I'm looking at one of the first cases, U.S. v. James, 28 MJ 214, which was an orange jumpsuit case in that instance, and it was whether the same treatment was done with any intent to punish or whether it was done with the through the ordinary course of complying with the local confinement rules. So I think in that situation, what we've seen is if there's an intent on the government to punish the person.
But that's interpreting Article 13. And under your analysis, we wouldn't even get to that stage. You would say that Article 58 just says that whatever treatment you're going to get in a civilian facility trumps whatever the UCMJ says as to treatment of military prisoners.
Your Honor, I'm out of time. May I answer the question? It is my understanding from the Article 13 analysis, a lot of the review that the courts will do is whether the act of putting them in there into that situation was an intent to punish. And that would survive.
What about pre-trial and post-trial, for example? Forget punishment.
Right.
If the rule is you're not allowed to commingle pre- and post-trial, how does that apply under your analysis with respect to 58?
Okay. Under my analysis, that commingling wouldn't apply differently pre-trial or post-trial. It would be, there's no intent to punish or to create a situation under Article 13 where you're treating them like they're a convicted person. It's just a matter of how the jail works. So that's where, like, the orange jumpsuit situation.
So 58 would trump Article 13 to the extent this court is interpreted to prohibit commingling of pre- and post-trial confinees.
Your Honor, I didn't do research in that realm.
But you don't need to if we stipulate that, whether that's an accurate description of our case law or Article 13 or not, if we stipulate that as a given,
right.
What your job is you're positing a theory today that says 58 is the more specific and therefore trumps, to the extent it's in conflict, 12. Doesn't that same theory apply to Article 13? It's the more specific, therefore it trumps 13.
It can, and if the begging court's indulgence, when I was doing research, I saw cases where there was a discussion where people were not awarded credit for commingling. I cannot give a cite for that.
No, but it's a logic question. It has nothing to do with the specifics.
Okay. In terms of the logic itself, as long as it is a normal operation of the jail itself, yes, it would under those circumstances, under 58, because we don't control those situations. We do know from the corrections AFIs in those situations that generally doesn't happen.
All right. Thank you very much. We now play musical chairs. And we'll stand in recess until 10:15 and resume and do the McPherson case. Thank you very much.
All right. Court stands in recess until 10:15.